Ripplingly withdrawing from his prey, Moby Dick now lay at a little distance, vertically thrusting his oblong white head up and down in the billows, and at the same time slowly revolving his whole spindled body, so that when his vast wrinkled forehead rose some 20 or more feet out of the water, the now rising swells, with all their confluent waves, dazzlingly broke against it, vindictively tossing their shivered spray still higher into the air. But soon resuming his horizontal attitude, Moby Dick swam swiftly round and round the wrecked crew, sideways churning the water in his vengeful wake, as if lashing himself up to still another and more deadly assault. The sight of the splintered boat seemed to madden him, as the blood of grapes and mulberries cast before Antiochus elephants in the Book of Maccabees. Meanwhile, Ahab, half-smothered in the foam of the whale's insolent tail, and too much of a cripple to swim, though he could still keep afloat even in the heart of such a whirlpool as that, helpless Ahab's head was seen, like a tossed bubble which the least chance shock might burst. From the boat's fragmentary stern, Fedella, incuriously and mildly, eyed him. The clinging crew at the other drifting end could not succor him. More than enough was it for them to look to themselves, for so revolvingly appalling was the white whale's aspect, and so planetarily swift the ever-contracting circles he made, that he seemed horizontally swooping upon them. Meantime, from the beginning, all this had been descried from the ship's mastheads, and squaring her yard she had borne down upon the scene, and was now so nigh that Ahab in the water hailed her.
"Sail on the—"
But that moment a breaking sea dashed on him from Moby Dick and whelmed him for the time. But struggling out of it again and chancing to rise on a towering crest, he shouted,
"Sail on the whale! Drive him off!"
The Pequod's prows were pointed, and breaking up the charmed circles, she effectively parted the white whale from his victim. As he sullenly swam off, the boats flew to the rescue. Dragged into Stubbs' boat with bloodshot, blinded eyes, the white brine caking in his wrinkles, the long tension of Ahab's bodily strength did crack, and helplessly he yielded to his body's doom. But this intensity of his physical prostration did but so much the more abbreviate it. In an instant's compass, great hearts sometimes condense to one deep pang, the sum total of those shallow pains kindly diffused through feebler man's whole lives.
"The harpoon," said Ahab, halfway rising and draggingly leaning on one bended arm. "Is it safe?"
"Aye, sir, for it was not darted. This is it," said Stubb, showing it.
"Lay it before me. Any missing men?"
"One, two, three, four, five. There were five oars, sir, and here are five men."
"That's good. Help me, man. I wish to stand. So. I see him. There. They're going to leeward still. What a leaping spout. Hands off from me. The eternal sap runs up in Ahab's bones again. Set the sail. Out oars. The helm."
It is often the case that when a boat is stove, its crew being picked up by another boat, help to work that second boat, and the chase is continued with what is called double-banked oars. It was thus now, but the added power of the boat did not equal the added power of the whale, for he seemed to have treble-banked his every fin, swimming with a velocity which plainly showed that if now, under these circumstances, pushed on, the chase would prove an indefinitely prolonged, if not a hopeless one. Nor could any crew endure for so long a period such an unintermitted, intense straining at the oar, a thing barely tolerable only in some one brief vicissitude. The ship itself, then, as it sometimes happens, offered the most promising intermediate means of overtaking the chase. Accordingly, the boats now made for her, and were soon swayed up to the cranes, the two parts of the wrecked boats having been previously secured by her, and then hoisting everything to her side, and stacking her canvas high up, and sideways outstretching it with stunsails, like the double-jointed wings of an albatross. The Pequod bore down in the leeward wake of Moby Dick. At the well-known methodic intervals, the whale's glittering spout was regularly announced from the manned mastheads, and when he would be reported as just gone down, Ahab would take the time, and then pacing the deck, binnacle watch in hand, so soon as the last second of the allotted hour expired, his voice was heard. "Whose is the doubloon now? Do you see him?" And if the reply was, "No, sir," straightway he commanded them to lift him to his perch. In this way the day wore on, Ahab now aloft and motionless, anon unrestingly pacing the planks.